Sworn in to be here on the budget. Senate Environment, Energy, and Natural Resources Budget Division will come to order. Welcome, everyone, and happy cold new year to everyone. I heard it was like 27 below in western Minnesota this morning, so it wasn't nearly as cold here, but my living room was 51 degrees this morning, and the guy who's supposed to insulate my house can't come this week because it's too cold to do the work.
You should pay your heating bill a little more regularly, then.
So anyway, yes. This room feels nice and warm to me. So I want to start with some just general introductions and announcements of what's happening with the committee. We'll start with that, and then we're going to do an overview of the unallotment part of this biennium's budget issues, and then we're going to have some testimony from the DNR and some other interested parties about the land sales of WMAs and other state lands. So let me start by doing introductions, and I think you all know the committee staff. We don't really have – we have the same team up here at the table that we've had for a long time. So Ed Werner from Minority Research – Gloria Gunville's not here. Sandra Boone, same as before. Erin Campbell from the Majority Leader's Office. And can you introduce yourself?
I'm Amanda Lilly. I'm with Senate Publications.
I'm sorry. I have you on the bottom of the list. There you go. Amanda Lilly, Senate Publications. Welcome to our committee. We have some session-only staff, so I want to make sure that everybody knows who they are. These will be very important people this session. Alec Geiser. Alec is a recent graduate from Carleton College, who's especially interested in environmental ethics and conservation. And he's our committee page for the session, along with Senator Kubley's committee, subcommittee page. He serves both functions. Is yours called a subdivision of our division?
It's called a subdivision, Madam Chair, and as soon as you find out the difference between that and a subcommittee, I'd be interested in knowing.
I think the difference is you get a half a page.
Maybe.
So lucky for you, we have Alec Geiser. And we also have one of our interns, Mary Kemp, is here. Mary, and she's our intern who will be serving on committee days, so she will be staffing the committee on a regular basis. So get to know Alec and Mary. Mary is also a graduate of the University of Minnesota with a major in environmental science, policy, and management with an emphasis on conservation resource management. So we have two really talented young people here to assist us, and so make sure you get to know them and say hello. We have another intern as well, but she won't be here during committee days. So that's the personnel. I want to talk about schedules. Well, challenges facing our division obviously are enormous this session, and we'll get to work on next biennium's budget soon. But right now we're going to focus on the current year, the rest of the 2009, and this biennial fiscal year. We're going to talk about the unallotment. And the one thing I remember from the documents that Mr. Mueller has prepared for us about the two-year biennium to come is that if you just did an across-the-board allocation of the budget reductions that would be required for each division, our share is about $46 million, is that right? $46 million. So just keep that number in your mind as it's not any kind of a target or even a prediction of things to come, but it gives you a sense of the magnitude of the problem that we're facing in our two-year budget problem that we have ahead of us. And obviously, with the February forecast, that could change, and not likely to change for the better. So we need everyone's ideas, and I really welcome creative solutions to our budget challenges that we face. Subcommittees I want to talk about for a moment. One of the things we've been thinking about is how to set up some structure to deal with the new constitutional legacy funds. And as you know, most of those dollars will be going through this committee for oversight. Most of the water money, the parks money, and the habitat money, this will be their committee of original jurisdiction. The water money obviously will be shared in terms of state agencies and other and jurisdiction with ag and economic development, as well as our division. And so we're looking into setting up some structures to provide some oversight, in particular on the water funds, which I'm not going to really – I'm not quite ready to say what those are yet. We're still thinking about that process. But one of the pieces that we definitely are going to do is to create some new subcommittees of this division. And so just for – I think most of you have heard, because Don's been going around talking to members about which subcommittees they'd like to serve on. And we already have Senator Kubley's subdivision on energy. We have Senator Saxhog's subcommittee on natural resources. We're going to add two more subcommittees, and one of them will be on water, specifically legacy funding for water. And there'll be another subcommittee on parks and trails, specifically legacy funding for parks and trails. So the jobs of those subcommittees in particular will be to do the initial review and to put together the initial recommendation for funding from the legacy dollars. So we won't be asking these subcommittees to review the overall budget on water and parks, but to review the legacy, the new constitutional amendment funding for water, parks, and trails. And Senator Saxhog's subcommittee will be where we start and put together recommendations for the habitat portion of those dollars. So we'll be doing those pieces specifically starting in subcommittees. So you all will have a lot of responsibilities on those subcommittees. And again, if you haven't had a chance to tell Don Jarofsky what your preferences are to serve on, please do that. And we'll be announcing the membership really soon. But we want to make sure we talk to everybody first. One more thing about scheduling. Okay, this Thursday is the governor's state of the state. We think we probably are going to bump into our committee given that and floor session. So we're not meeting. I believe I'll be meeting with committee Republicans on Thursday. And next Tuesday is inauguration day. We're not going to be meeting then. The following Thursday, the 22nd, Senator Saxhog and Senator Kubley's subcommittees are both going to be meeting in lieu of the full committee, so just for scheduling purposes. So we won't have a full committee meeting for a couple of weeks, but we will be busy.
Madam Chair.
Senator Kubley.
Could I say a brief advertisement? You know, my subdivision is meeting on power storage. You know, there's a lot of talk about the lack of being able to store energy from renewable sources particularly, but we have a man from the National Energy Department of Energy coming, plus another person who used to be the commissioner of the ISO in California, who is coming to talk about what California is doing in that regard. So it's on power storage.
Excellent. So that's next Thursday, the 22nd, in this room? Is that how we ended up? Yeah. Excellent. And are you aware of a company called, or product called iCell, that is going to be manufacturing very small storage modules for renewable energy, and they're hoping to open a manufacturing facility in St. Paul?
Okay.
I'll get you some information about that.
Yeah, and XL is actually building a storage unit down by Laverne, so that's in Minnesota, too, in Senator Vickerman's district.
That will be great to hear about. And Senator Saxhog, do you want to talk about your subcommittee?
Well, I just want to thank you, Madam Chair. The 22nd, then, we're going to be getting together with Chairman Mike Kilgore of the Lessard Heritage Council, and he's going to talk about process.
Excellent. Very good. All right. Are there any questions from committee members? All right. Well, let's get started with our agenda then, and stay tuned. We'll be talking more about water planning issues as we move forward as well. So why don't we start with Mr. Mueller? Do you want to start by giving us a little bit of an overview, and then we'll invite the agency folks up to the table?
Madam Chair and members, I'll go briefly over the unallotment, a little bit over the total unallotments for all the agencies, and then focus a little bit more on what this division, the agencies in this division, have at least targeted for unallotment under the governor's proposal. I'm working off this one sheet called State of Minnesota General Fund Budget, and the columns to, I guess the first column I'll we should look at is the third numbered column over, which is 1108, fiscal year 08-09 total budget. That column there represents the total spending for each budget division for fiscal years 08-09, which is the biennium we are currently in. You'll go down, you'll see environment, energy, and natural resources spending. We're at about $423 million of general fund spending for this budget division, which is about 1.2% of the total general fund. And then you go down, you see the total spending for all agencies in the total state is about $34.6 million. We had a deficit, a current biennium deficit of $426 million, you see way down at the bottom. And we were using about $155 million of reserves to cover that deficit, which leaves us with about $271 million of unallotments on the governor's maybe just first round, depending how future forecasts go, there could be more unallotments. But so if you go to the column governor's 12-19-08 unallotment, that gives us the total of $271.4 million of unallotments. Mm-hmm. This division shows $6.9 million, environment and energy. And right now, that does not include the $500,000 of commerce. That's actually in the $7.8 million under economic development spending, because the way the commerce number was given out, it's just part of their agency operations, and we hadn't figured out how to split it between the energy and other parts of commerce yet. So the $6.9 million is $5.5 million DNR, $1.4 million PCA. Now, that's part of a $40 million general unallotment that the governor said would come from all the state agencies' operations. And what we're here today to find out from DNR and PCA and Commerce, if they are able to give us a little bit more information about how that number is being split within their agencies. And like I said, some of these numbers could change. The governor could order more unallotments, and none of these numbers have been, or some of these amounts haven't been taken away from the agencies yet, so they could move some of the money around yet. And I think DNR actually is going to show us their reduction is $5.3 million instead of $5.5 million, because based on they were not able to make some of the money that was being counted originally was open appropriations that they can't really make reductions to. Percentage-wise, like I said, this division spends about 1.2% of the general fund, and as far as unallotments go, this division gets about 2.5% of the unallotments, or the total unallotments, come from agencies within this division. That's sort of the last column over. And it should actually be fiscal year 2008 and 9 unallotments. The 1.63% number is how much the unallotments are as compared to our total general fund spending in this area. So about 1.6% of the $423 million is being unallotted. So that's a brief overview of just how the unallotments are framed, both in this for all the budget areas and then within this area. And I guess what we're here today to find out from PCA and DNR is if they're able to give us a little bit more information about the numbers that the governor has unallotted in their agency.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Mueller. Now, when we have the February forecast, if it comes in lower for the remainder of this year, we could be facing further cuts for this year, correct?
Right.
Okay. And the governor can still unallot once when we're in session, technically? He can do it whenever? Mm-hmm. Or yes. We could decide to do it cooperatively. Mm-hmm. We could make the cuts.
Madam Chair, I believe he did that in 03. He unallotted while we were in session.
Yep.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much for that. Let's start with, I guess we're starting with Commerce. Is Jeremy DeFebra here? Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay.
does he have in hand?
Go ahead, please, if you want to introduce yourself.
Certainly. Thank you. My name is Jeremy DeFibria, and I work in the Office of Energy Security in the Department of Commerce. And we've been asked to discuss current year unallotments and how that affects the Office of Energy Security. And I should preface the remarks by saying unallotments related to OES none have been made. We have only recommended up to MMB. That being said, of the 500 identified that you placed into the Commerce column, 250,000 of that has been recommended out of the Office of Energy Security. It is entirely out of the $1 million appropriation made in 2007, Chapter 57, to the Rural Wind Energy Development Assistance Program, which is funded out of general fund at $1 million. They are currently, that program is operated on a contract through the Center for Rural Policy and Development and the Southwest Initiative Foundation. We've discussed this cut with the Southwest Initiative Foundation staff, Scott Marquardt and Cheryl Glazer, and while they are obviously not ecstatic about it, they have been planning for this for a bit of time now and feel that with some modifications to their program, which in we did an evaluation of that program back in November, and in that report we made some program modification recommendations. With those modifications, they feel that they should be able to continue to operate their program probably through June 30, 2010, which is actually beyond the original anticipated date of the 2007 appropriation.
Thank you. I haven't really heard any updates from them about what they're doing. So do you have any information about
they are
specifics?
We did submit the executive summary of their report to us back in November along with our evaluation. And I don't have their report with me, but they did not get a contract from the Center for Rural Policy and Development until February. And in the intervening 8 to 9 months from then to when we did our evaluation, they had hired staff. They had begun landowner education, outreach to various municipalities and other community organizations that were interested in wind development. I believe they had offers of interest for their technical assistance from five community organizations and municipalities, and we're developing a technical assistance program for those units of government.
Okay. And whatever happened to the wind aggregation program? Didn't you have some funding for that, too, to work with that?
That's correct, Madam Chair. There was a $100,000 a year assessment for wind aggregation, and I have mentioned this to Senator Kubley, who was the chief author of that bill. We have discussed that program with a number of members of the wind industry and with Southwest Initiative Foundation staff, and no one feels that we can actually do a functioning program at that price. So our intention is to come back to the legislature with a recommendation on if there are other activities of value that $100,000 assessment could be put to that might aid in turbine procurement without trying to do an aggregation program. We thought that an aggregation program would likely cost in excess of $500,000 a year to effectively operate, and even then it would be dicey.
Okay. All right. Well, I think as we move forward through the budget discussions, for all the members and for you, Mr. DeFibra, I mean, we're just going to have to probably invite all these different groups that have been received grants, if we can, to get them to come in and talk to us about what they're doing, because we're going to have to evaluate each program on its merits at this point and see whether we can continue to fund them or not and what value they're bringing to our state. So So you've sent that report to us?
Yes, we sent that back in November.
So I'm sure it's in my office somewhere. I'll be sure to read it as soon as I find it in the stacks of mail. All right. Are there any other questions for Mr. DeFibra? All right. I guess that's all we need for today. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Same one that you do have. Mm-hmm. Same.
That's right. Yeah, we had, oh yeah, I forgot to ask that. I think that was $2 million total.
It was $2 million and then $2 million?
Yeah, we're just remembering that bill, the Rural Wind Assistance Program that we were just talking about. That was my bill a couple of years ago, and the governor, we had originally a $2 million appropriation, and the governor vetoed $1 million of it?
It was, Madam Chair,
the second year?
It was $1 million each year, and he vetoed the second year of it. So,
which would have been for this year? For 2009.
Oh, so this is.
And so that's what you were referring to, Mr. DeFebra, that it, sorry, that they just got their money in 2008. Go ahead.
Yes, Madam Chair. In February 2008 was when they finally got a contract out of the Center for Rural Policy and Development. And to date, they have invoiced us for about $200,000 of that $1 million. Okay. And I believe that they, when I talked to them today, they said they had approximately another $250,000 in costs that they were going to invoice, but some of that was forward-looking for grants that they were going to be making in the coming months.
So their total appropriation under existing law now is $1 million?
Yes, Madam Chair.
And okay, and so you're suggesting, you're recommending the $250,000 cut. And where did you say that funding came from?
That was in 2007, Chapter 57.
And was that?
In the appropriations.
General fund?
General fund.
General,
yes.
Fund, yeah. Makes sense. Thank you.
Okay.
I
could note one other thing, that the law required that they do a 35% match in that first year, and they have secured a $500,000 McKnight Foundation grant,
okay,
so that the state appropriation is not their sole resource.
Okay, great. All right, thank you. All right, now on to the DNR. Mr. Meyer, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you. For the record, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. You should have in front of you a one-page chart titled Department of Natural Resources 2009 Unallotments. I'll be walking through this, and then I do have the individual division directors here that can answer any specific questions we may have from information that's on this spreadsheet. Let me start by saying that DNR's total unallotment for 09 at this point in time is $5.3 million. If you do the numbers, I know Mr. Mueller had questions why it 5.5 was it, if you do the math, that comes out, but because of the open appropriations for fire and payment in lieu of taxes, we had discussions with the Department of Finance that it didn't make sense to reduce those open appropriations. So our actual allotment right now is $5.3 million, if that makes any sense.
Mr. Meyer, can I just ask you, do you know off the top of your head how much those two open appropriations are?
Madam Roughly. Chair, payment in lieu of taxes, I believe, is a little bit over $41 million for last biennium. And the fire open appropriation, I want to say, is I don't know, Mr. Mueller, do you have the actual number there? Fire?
Sorry,
I think.
Madam,
get it real
Chair,
quick.
The DNR firefighting one for 08-09 is $23.5
million. And the total general fund for DNR is
$72.2 million per year. Based upon the last biennial budget.
No, I mean, what's your total general fund budget for the agency? Do you have that?
It's, Madam Chair, including the opens, it's about $181 million.
Okay. Thank you.
Is that including one-time dollars as well?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. You were looking at base general fund appropriations,
right,
for our target.
Okay.
Okay. And I should just mention the PILT issue in the Heritage Council meeting yesterday. We had some discussion about that, and I think it would be helpful. Maybe you could help us come up with some kinds of estimates about what we could anticipate. You know, we talked about maybe asking project proposers to estimate what potential tax consequences could be if we were to acquire, you know, certain parcels of land around the state. And we decided that would be kind of hard for an individual project proposer to come up with. But maybe you or someone in your staff, Mr. Meyer, could help us you know, just to have some kind of ballpark estimates about if the Lessard Council spent a certain number of millions of dollars on new land acquisition, what kind of impact that might have around the state in tax consequences, lost tax revenue, and expected PILT payments from the state.
Madam Chair, if you compare what most of that land would be taxed at would be either ag land or rec land, mm-hmm. and what the PILT payment is right now for acquired lands, it's 0.75% of the appraised value. So if you spend X number of millions of dollars, times that by 0.75%, that'll be your PILT payment. But then the counties reappraise those lands every 5 years, and the PILT payments go up from there. Previously, PILT was about $18 million. It jumped to a little bit over $21 million this past biennium. We're anticipating next biennium to be about $25 million per year because of that five-year escalator. Every time the property is reassessed, then those PILT payments go up again. So there's an escalator in there basically every 5 years. But if you were to compare what the actual tax dollars were to be, I did this calculation just the other day with a landowner who owns a section of land, mm-hmm. what they actually pay on their property taxes and what the PILT payments were, mm-hmm. and it was really close. So mm-hmm. I was kind of surprised that it was that close, and that's on his actual assessed value of land. So it's comparable, and then there's less services that are involved with once that land is a management unit. There is some benefit from having people come to those areas and spend money in restaurants and gasoline and things like that as well. But we would love to be able to come back and have a more detailed discussion with you folks on where the projections of PILT are right now, what PILT, where it's come from, where it's going, and the issues surrounding that. We look forward to doing that whenever your committee is available, Madam Chair.
And I guess, I'd like to see a report on how many acres, and if it meets your formula, I guess that'd be pretty easy to figure out, but how many acres we're already paying on, and, you know, compare that with what we might anticipate in the future.
Madam Chair, we can get that for you. As soon as possible.
Thank you. All right. Do you want to go ahead?
Yes. Going back to the spreadsheet again, you can see the 2009 unallotments at this point in time total $5.3 million. And it's important to remember that these are general fund appropriations that are there based upon unexpended balances. So, for example, in the lands and minerals division, it is not any of the minerals management account that comes from the school trust and the permanent university trust fund dollars. These are only general fund appropriations that were given to the department, allocated to the department by the legislature for FY 08-09. Lands and minerals, the unallotment at this point for 2009 is approximately $713,000. And you can see the impacts here. We'll do no additional work on minerals cooperative environmental research and the iron ore cooperative research project grants. Currently, we're working on several projects dealing with demagnetizing coils, straight grate models, and be eliminating the matching funds for that research that's going on. We'll also have a reduced level of effort to manage and process all real estate transactions and manage the state's mineland reclamation program, or else deal with other divisional projects as those priorities come in.
Okay, so what's the total general fund appropriation for this area? Is this the whole appropriation?
Madam Chair, no, but I don't have that on here. I can get that for you. Let me see.
Do you have that spreadsheet?
We can ask Mr. Mueller, too. Go ahead.
Madam Chair and members and... Just dawned on me, too, that I think we made a reduction in one of these areas last year also. So, but the original appropriation, the iron ore cooperative research was $475,000 per year. But part of that was from the minerals management account. So $275,000 was from the general fund. But like I said, I'm trying to remember. I'll have to look last year's bill. We also made a reduction in this area last year also in the deficit reduction bill. So,
Madam Chair... it might be helpful if I give you the numbers that was the remaining unspent balances that we were looking at mm-hmm. of this amount that
sure.
was taken out of there. And I can provide this information to the committee in an electronic spreadsheet later this afternoon.
All right.
The unspent balance that was remaining in the Lands and Minerals Division General Fund was $3.8 million. So this $713,000 is coming out of that $3.8 million, and these are the impacts that you'll be seeing because of those reductions.
All right.
I apologize for the confusion.
Are there questions about this area? Okay, go ahead, please.
Moving on to the Division of Waters, and I'm just going to start with that total number. The unspent general fund remaining at this point is approximately $8.2 million. The reduction that we're looking to take general fund from the Division of Waters is $1.1995 million. It's made up of three different pieces of general fund dollars, one dealing with ethanol water use. We'll not be filling a position. We'll be reducing supplies and expenses, and less water resource investigation will be taking place for the remainder of the biennium. There's also a balance in the Stream Loan Protection Program, which is general fund dollars. That will be wiped out. There'll be no balance available. There has been no demand or no request for those dollars for several years, so we're just going to zero out that account.
They had a little bit of money coming back.
Okay.
We didn't completely.
In the Waters General Fund, there'll be no general fund flood damage reduction grants for such things as rain dikes, small city projects, City of Ada cost share for the federal fund control study, and three hydrologist positions will be held vacant.
Is any of this considered clean water legacy funding?
Not under the Division of Waters, ma'am.
Okay. Any questions?
Well.
Senator Chaudhry, then Senator Bach.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Mr. Meyer. The $1.2 million, how do ethanol water use, stream loan protection program, and general waters programming break down?
Welcome, Mr. Lacosmo.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Kent Lacosmo, Director of Division of Waters. The breakout for that would be the ethanol water use, which was one-time funding, is $47,608. Stream Loan Protection Program at a balance of $421,867. And the Waters General Fund, which was some money from 08 and 09, $730,035.
Okay. Any follow-up, Senator Chaudhry?
On the Stream Loan Protection Program, what's your estimate of number of projects or quantity of projects that will not now be able to go forward after this reduction?
Mr. Chairman, Senator
Mr. Chaudhry,
that program was started in 1999 and some other funding added in 2001. And there's really only been one applicant for those funds because it's a loan, and that was the City of Stillwater. So they're in the process of paying that back, and it goes into a revolving fund. We've advertised in the Register several times for new applicants and haven't gotten any. So I don't think that we're missing any opportunities because we haven't had any interest. And the legislature last biennium deleted the balance at that time, which was $1.4 million. And this is the accumulated balance based on the payments in the last biennium.
Yeah, I was going to say, maybe you could let us know how much is going to be coming in the next 2 years. We'll all have our eyes on that.
Madam Chairman, the payment, one of the loans, and we're doing a report that's required by January 15th, so you'll have that information. One of the loans is done being paid in 2011, and the other one goes till 2013. We received $97,500 January 31st and July 31st of each year.
Okay, great. Thank you. Senator Bach.
Madam Chair, Mr. Knopf can correct me if my memory is not accurate, but I believe this program was the brainchild of then-Representative Mark Holston from Stillwater. And it was a new program that we created, I believe, in that session. Mr. Lacosmo, how's my memory?
Madam Chairman, Senator Bach, your memory is accurate.
All right. Madam Chair, Stillwater.
Madam Chair, Senator
Knopf.
Bach, it was also then Senator Krenz at the mm-hmm. time in the Senate side. In fact, I think the language was actually written over here in the Senate.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well.
Just one last follow-up.
Senator Chaudhry.
Chair, sounds like it was this program was kind of created with a specific project in mind, but may have had certainly other applications around the state. Did the trout fishing interests have a wide knowledge of this program, and did they not feel like it applied to their work?
Mm-hmm. Madam so Chairman, Senator Chaudhry, this program was actually well conceived because the issue was Browns Creek, which is a trout stream on the north side of Stillwater. And to protect the trout stream, you needed to do some work prior to the development. And the city gets the money to do that kind of protection through the charges made on the development. So to get it done in advance, they basically needed cash up front to be able to do the protective works. And then they recoup the money through the development charges. So that's what happened to provide that protection for Browns Creek, and it was quite effective. So the trout groups, at least locally there, knew about this, how widely generally entities aren't looking for loans. They're looking more for grants and for other types of help. So we've had no interest when we've advertised.
Thank you.
All right. Any other questions? Great. Thank you. Go ahead,
Madam
Mr.
Chair,
Mayor.
Moving on to the Division of Forestry. Forestry is a little bit different. The unspent number that we were looking at, an unspent balance currently at the time was $13 million. Of course, the majority of their work goes on in the winter season and getting sales up and things like that. So the actual unallotment here is only $786,000, almost $787,000. There's also some other forces at play within the Division of Forestry's budget. As we're well aware, the Forest Management Investment Account is under extreme pressure. We've taken over $4 million of unallotments out of that account since last biennium, or since last year. We'll be coming back. You'll be receiving a report shortly on where those unallotments occurred. And timber receipts are down once again because of the economy, basically. So we need to make sure that what we're doing to the Division of Forestry is not causing irreparable harm wherever possible. I think nobody knows better than that than the people who have large areas of forest in their districts and seeing the impacts that are going on out there. So this reduction will result in some impacts in our land asset management program, doing some exchanges and things like that, deferring critical access easements, land exchanges, trespass and acquisition of forest lands. Also, intermediate stand treatments will be deferred, and minimum maintenance roads will be closed due to lack of funding for gravel crushing and grading in some cases.
Mr. Meyer, you said the balance is $13
million. Madam Chair, I'm sure that number is less than that number actually right now. That's a number I'm citing from back in December.
Okay.
Off the report that I have.
And you expect that's, I mean, how much, is that how much you normally spend in a year?
The forest management program is ramping up rather than most programs ramp up in the springtime. We're hoping to have most of these funds allocated. A lot of these dollars are salaries and actually contracts that would go out to people to do the work. So out of the $13 million, Madam Chair.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Senator Saxhog.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Meyer, talking about timber receipts and timber production and the reduction here, I mean, can you tell us, is it going to affect it? I mean, you get timber receipts go down when you can't get people in the woods, but do you see these reductions reducing the amount of wood you're going to be able to put up just because you don't have the manpower, so to speak?
Madam Chair, Senator Saxhog, no, and we're trying to make sure that we continually do get the timber up for sale so people can keep working wherever there's a possibility to keep working, and that's why you'll see the activities or the impacts. Do not talk about putting up less wood on the market. We need to continue those efforts and keep them on track at whatever possible cost we have. That is our main goal, is keeping those forest lands in productivity.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, if there are no questions, I'll move on to parks and trails. And as you may recall, we have reorganized.
I'm sorry, Senator Chaudhry.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Mr. Meyer, do you have an estimate of how many critical access easements will be deferred and how much forest land will not be acquired now?
Bring up Bob Tomlinson from the Division of Forestry. He may have some rough estimations.
Welcome, Mr. Tomlinson.
Madam Chair, members, Bob Tomlinson, Division of Forestry. We don't have an exact number of it, but we do spend a couple of FTEs worth of time working that's paid for out of the general fund appropriation that goes towards this effort. And that effort will obviously be curtailed between now and the end of the fiscal year. Senator Chaudhry, I could get back to you, I guess, with a number. It would be the best thing with relative to access easements that we may not be able to enter into and/or the acquisition. I don't think this will really deal so much with buying land, because we're not going to buy a lot of land with that amount, but it would be the administrative work around that responsibility.
Thank you.
That would be helpful if we could get that information.
We'll do that.
Thank you. Go ahead, Senator Bach.
Madam Chair, Mr. Tomlinson, looking forward, considering forestry is heavily dependent on general fund, does the department have authority to, and I don't think I got this terminology right, but to auction off tracts of timber, and I want to say sold as appraised, and I don't think that's quite the right wordage, but does the department have the authority at an auction to let our timber sale go and that's the end of it? We don't scale the wood that comes off, and does that save any money? And I know there's states or provinces that do that. I'm just kind of wondering if considering these budget times, if you have authority to do that or if you would need some new statutory language to do that.
Madam Mr. Chair, Tomlinson. Members, Senator Bach, we do have the authority. And what Senator Bach has alluded to is that fact that right now about 90-plus percent of all of our timber is sold via consumer scale, which has a workload associated with it once the timber is sold. The process that the loggers, the industry, and the foresters all like, because it seems to be a fair, kind of an equitable thing, things kind of balance out in the end. But it's also, there's a cost to the division, to the loggers, and to the industry, and we're in the process right now of analyzing what those costs are and what savings there might be relative to selling a larger percentage on appraised value versus a consumer value, which is the way we go now.
So, Madam Chair, Mr. Tomlinson, Senator it is Bob. Called appraised value. It's not called the auction value. Or
SOAV would be just selling it. We go out and sell it as appraised. That's right, the appraised value.
And I'd be interested,
ahead,
Madam
Bob.
Chair, Mr. Tomlinson, if you're working on that, I'd be interested in knowing how much revenue that also saves for this trust fund. Much of this is trust fund land, so would there be additional money going into the trust that we're not charging against the suspense account? So there might be two benefits, one in general fund savings and the other in that there would be additional revenue going into the trust fund. So if you could break it out that way, because I think there's savings potentially in both areas.
Mr. Tomlinson.
We can do that. It certainly would be in reduced cost is what it might be to the trust. So we'd have to take a look at that.
I'm trying to understand, though, that what you're talking about, the difference here. One is you do the processing, and what's the difference in the sale price when you do it the other way? I mean, does that account for the extra costs or not?
Right now, when we sell timber in southern Minnesota, southeastern Minnesota, we go out and we individually appraise each and every log in the tree. And so we have a very accurate estimation of the board feet that's going to come off of an acre of oak woodland in southeastern Minnesota. And we say that there is 10,000 board feet, and we set a price that a minimum accepted price. We put it out for auction, and it's bid as the appraised price, and that's what it is. We get paid. If the actual volume that's harvested is more, that's a benefit to the logger. If it's less, well, it's not such a benefit to the logger. And so the chips kind of fall where they might. We have to be pretty accurate with our estimation and our appraisals. When we're selling aspen in northern Minnesota, we're selling it on a consumer scale approach where we go out and we take plots in the woods. We don't estimate all the trees, but we try and get a pretty good understanding of about how many cords there is in a particular sale, and then we put it up for sale on a consumer scale approach, which may be plus or minus 10%. And what happens then is that the purchaser buys it, and they have an agreement with all the companies who scale it at the meets the mill, and then we reconcile the differences at the end. And so it's all fairly, you know, we can be off 10%, but it's not that big of a thing as long as we get the reconciled monies at the end of it. And the loggers could be over, they could, you know, we might have to pay them a difference back. But that's generally the way it works. And I think what Senator Bakken's suggestion is that it just that there's a cost to doing business that way. Mm-hmm. And we need to evaluate that and see if we can't be more efficient and doing it. There is going to be more upfront work. We're going to have to do a better job of scaling aspen like we do with the, you know, we can't do it all the individual trees like we do. But so there's going to be some costs there, and we need to weigh those and look at those opportunities. Mm-hmm.
Senator Saxhawk.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to follow up on Senator Bach's question. So, Mr. Tomlinson, when we're talking about what we don't normally do with our aspen sales up in northern Minnesota now, sold as appraised, and we get more into the production of biomass and, you know, and the different types of ethanol, secondary ethanol, and those types of things, and start using those parts of the tree that maybe don't get used as much now. Do you think sold as appraised is going to make more sense, or?
I'm going to defer to the expert on it.
Yeah, and I realize we've got.
Dave Epperly on this.
Go ahead. Keep at these are good questions. So. Welcome, Mr. Epperly.
Madam Chair, Dave Epperly, Director of Forestry for the DNR. Madam Chair, Senator Saxhawk, an excellent question. Sold on appraise is you know, as Bob Tomlinson alluded to, there's more cost up front. There's less administration during the contract period and at the end when you're finalizing the amount of volume that's been harvested. But there is a trade-off with those costs up front. It allows the logger to better utilize material, but it also puts a little bit more responsibility on them to go out and take a look to make sure that the appraised volume is what it says. As Mr. Tomlinson alluded to, if there was less volume because it's a statistical analysis to determine that, they could be out some money. On the other hand, typically there's an overrun or more volume, then they do all right, and that reduces their costs. So there's trade-offs. I think, as Mr. Tomlinson said, we want to make sure that we do a proper analysis and make sure that we've got the right statistical analysis in the appraisals, which will take more upfront costs, more field time. On the other hand, there may be some potential administrative savings that would offset those costs. And so we'd want to be really close, take a good close look at that so that the landowner, the taxpayers are benefiting, and it's an advantage to the users as well.
Thank you.
All right, Senator Bach.
Madam Chair, Mr. Epperly, have you thought about taking it to the next level? Where I believe the province of Ontario does it is they actually will sell large tracts of timber, and the logging company is required to use the best management practices. We would define what kind of techniques or BMPs we want to use, but leave the forestry aspect, basically sell a tract of timber and let the logging company do the management rather than have the landowner do the management. Have we talked about that at all?
Mr. Epperly.
Madam Chair, Senator Bach, yes, we have. As a matter of fact, recently we have put out a request for information in the state register to get information from those entities that might be interested in doing something like that. We got some inquiries, but we didn't get any information that we were looking for. That doesn't mean we're going to give up. The other thing that I know some counties are taking advantage of selling large blocks, whereby they have a specific amount of time and management criteria, and they auction it off similar to the way they do it currently through the use of cutting blocks or harvest blocks, where they can break out the various areas and the silvicultural practices that need to occur, and they sell it that way. And that has some advantages as well. And so we're looking at that. And again, it's making sure we do a sufficient analysis to make sure all parties, the logger, landowner, are satisfied.
Senator Bach?
Well, Madam Chair, I raise those issues because this division is heavily dependent on general fund. And as this committee and the legislature moves forward, we may have to look at doing some things differently in order to make sure that an adequate supply of wood is put up for sale for the industry. And the way we currently do it, we're pretty heavily dependent on state employees to make sure that that wood gets put up, and those are dollars in this budget. So I appreciate that the department is looking at those kind of things. That's the kind of approach I think much of state government's going to have to take if we're going to find our way out of this budget situation.
Senator Kubley?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And, you know, I'm not sure which of you could respond to this, but it seems like I've had kind of a steady stream of folks coming through the office talking about renewable energy projects, many of which are talking about using waste wood. You know, I assume that waste wood comes from both industries that deal with forestry products and from you know, an agency like your own itself. You know, is there something that the department does that captures a cost for waste wood, or, you know, what is the final outcome of you know, disposing of those kinds of products that don't have another use?
Mr. Eberle?
Madam Chair, Senator Kubley, the direct answer is that the industries that are using wood currently have been using what is called waste wood for many years. The issue is, how do we package it to sell it, to make sure that the industries that use round wood raw materials are satisfied and have the available timber, and those that are using wood for, or what is called waste wood for energy, are also have access to that market. And so, in addition to the methods that I was describing earlier to Senator Bach, we're also looking at ways that we can package the timber sale and how we sell the timber. Currently, we sell it cords or bore feet. We may be looking at selling it in tons. That includes the full range of material on the ground. So it's just another way to package it, another way to market it. But all of these things are being discussed, and they're all looking for making supply available and trying to make it the most economical means of selling it and harvesting it.
Now, I know we appropriated some money a couple years ago for the study of harvesting wood, you know, kind of wood waste from land restoration and public lands and parks, and this was part of the Rock 10 appropriation. And I think Barb Spears has been working on that project in your agency to, and maybe that's not under forestry. Maybe
Madam
it's under
Chair,
parks. I don't know.
That program is being run out of ecological resources because it is dealing with invasive species and restoration activities. And you can go as close as Mounts Park Boulevard and Mounts Park and see some excellent work that was done on buckthorn removal and then follow-up management, and also providing biomass as well, which is just a huge opportunity for industry and for all landowners, because if you look around, there's a lot of buckthorn out there, and getting it out and using it as an energy source, but getting it off the grounds only provides restoration for the Oak Savannah that we're in right now here, And it's just a huge opportunity, and it's been a very successful project, Madam Chair. We hope we have some time to update the committee on the outcomes of that project as well. Also, in terms of biomass, we do take the biomass issue very seriously, and actually, I'm going to take her by surprise, but Anna Robertson over here is our Division of Forestry biomass expert. She has a lot of expertise in the area, and will help us answer and develop policy, is helping us answer and develop policy around these important questions.
Great. All right. Well, good questions.
Well, Madam Chair, before we move on, I should just say the wood products industry was doing renewable energy long before it was popular here at the Capitol. Matter of fact, one of you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that 28% of all the energy that's used in our paper mills and our board plants up north is generated from wood waste. And those are energy-intensive businesses. So, I mean, they were in this business and haven't done a very good job of telling their story of how much renewable energy they've been using for a long, long time.
Yeah, and, you know, as we get into an economy that rewards that more and more, hopefully that will provide some benefit to them because they really must have reduced their carbon emissions dramatically from what they would have been otherwise.
Yep.
So it's a good thing. All right. Thank you.
Members,
should we move on?
This was a great discussion, and a lot of good points were brought up, and not only on timber sales, but a lot of other things that the department does we need to be rethinking and retooling, and we will be having more discussions down this path in the coming weeks and months. So I appreciate the openness of the committee and the good discussion we have because, Senator Box, right, the only way we're all going to get through this is working together, come up with some new innovative solutions. So
absolutely,
we are more than open to working with you guys on those challenges. Moving on to parks and trails, Madam Chair, you may recall past December we did combine parks and trails to deal with the challenge line before us in outdoor recreation. We'll be talking about that in our budget documents in coming weeks. But the unallotment here is $1.25 million. And once again, that's coming out of, I'm just going to use the parks and trails numbers separate at this point in time. $15 million off of parks and $1.6 million for trails unspent. But again, the parks work especially is, again, the spring from now until June 30th is a huge workload for the Division of Parks, so that's why there is a balance sitting there, a lot of those being salaries and especially temporary staff salaries that we will be rehiring to deal with the Memorial Day, 4th of July, getting the parks ready and operating for people to enjoy in the spring. Some of the impacts will be delaying the day use of facilities in some parks, reducing some public services offered at parks, also delaying resource management projects such as forest and prairie restoration until the coming biennium. On the trail side, we'll be doing emergency repairs as our top priority, overlays and things like that. You may have seen some work or some discussion about the North Shore Trail and some snowmobile bridges that we had to repair so we could get the groomers across those most recently. Other maintenance issues will be dealt with on a priority basis, and also non-motorized forest trail projects will be, it says reduced, they'll be delayed until the following biennium, until 2010 and 2011. It's important to remember that where there are dedicated funds, there are activities ongoing, such as snowmobile, grant and aid, things like that. Non-motorized trail system in the state of Minnesota is general fund. There is no user fee that drives that program. So that's why this shows up on the impact list.
Except for skis and horses.
Are there any questions on the parks and trails?
Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Myers, you've got in this explanation here also the delay of invasive species treatments will be deferred. What species might that refer to? And
Madam Chair, members, this would be invasive species management within the park system, primarily buckthorn and other things like that, terrestrial invasive species, not dealing with aquatic invasive species.
Or what's that, ash borer?
Emerald ash borer, no, that's coming out of, that's Division of Forestry and Ecological Resources.
Thank you.
This is actual invasive species management on state park lands, on state lands.
So can you give me a little more detail about what delays in facilities and services at the parks we can expect in before July 1st. Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chairman, Cortland Nelson, Director of Parks and Trails. If there would be project work that we ordinarily would kick off in April when things dry out, whether it would be in the northern forests or in the prairies, that would be delayed to the fall. If there would be hiring of crews for some mechanical work in terms of removing deadfall or some problem trees or whatever, that would be delayed. Those are the kind of measurements that we would have to take at that point in time and evaluate the net cost and benefit. But it's that type of project work that is manpower or equipment expensive and would be delayed till another opportunity.
This also mentions the opening of day use facilities and some public service.
Madam Chair, in the case of a typical park, it may be a two-week delay in opening a building and hiring the seasonals who then would staff that building and provide that service. Mm-hmm. Or program elements may be delayed a couple of weeks or up to a month where we would not bring people on and then use those opportunities and put them into place as the summer season gets up and rolling.
So normally, do most of the buildings all open Memorial Day weekend for the first time, or is there more variety?
Madam Chair, the larger parks are open all year long. Mm-hmm. The medium-sized parks would be hiring staff beginning in about a month, mm-hmm. and we would open sometime in March or April a number of our buildings and services. We would at least have buildings open according to a schedule, and as visitors come, there would be somebody there to meet them, and the business of state parks would be conducted. All of that would be delayed by a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks under this scenario at a number of those buildings that are closed or are not open to the public year-round.
Senator Saxon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a little more off in the future, but Mr. Nelson, are you doing a little bit of a reorganization in your particular division? Or?
Madam Chair, Senator, I believe in our budget presentation we will be getting into that. We have combined the parks activities and the trails and waterways activities into a single division. And as we speak, we have a transition team that is meeting and evaluating constraints and opportunities and net gains and how we're going to manage all of that. The commissioner has given us till January of 2010 to put this whole thing together. We will be making decisions between now and then as the opportunities come along, and we'll have a nice presentation for you at the appropriate time.
All right. Senator Chaudhry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. But a year or two ago, we did consider a fairly well-publicized program regarding invasive species in the parks regarding the emerald ash borer and firewood transfers. So how will this on allotment, and you might as well add what you're considering now in your budget for this biennium, affect that firewood program and anything else you are considering?
Madam Chair, Senator, it will not affect the emerald ash borer program. All of those decisions that were made with regards to the environmental or outreach education, practices that we have at the park, and the public education that goes on about that will continue using the partnership that exists within the department with forestry and eco resources, as well as the Department of Agriculture. The only impact might be that in some cases for a week or two, people will arrive at the park. There may not be somebody in an office that will ask them if they brought firewood or not. And in that case, that will be a responsibility that has to occur later that day when they're in the park and somebody on our staff is coming around taking care of campground activities, and that conversation will have to occur at that point rather than when they arrive at the park. For those of you who are looking at me with a little bit of question, we have an emerald ash borer program that was put in place 2 years ago. This is to prevent the spread of that particular insect around the state, and one of the things that we did very successfully was to prohibit the movement of firewood for camping around the state. and we enforce that at our state parks. And so the senator's question, I believe most of it had to do with what's the impact of that going to be. With regards to the other part of your question, and inferred by at least one other member, about the resource management projects that we have, in the bonding bill, there were many dollars that came forward for prairie restoration, forest and savanna restoration. Those have to do with larger, more intensive conversions of our land from one state to another, which is allowed in the bonding bill. Those will go ahead unencumbered in this process. And, of course, we try and have our money go as far as we can, and we try and take as care of as many projects as we can. But the bonding activities and a number of the resource protection measures that we are doing will proceed regardless of what happens with the unallotment decisions.
And the bonding dollars, do they allow you to take some staffing or administrative costs out of them?
Madam Chair, they do under certain conditions, yes.
Okay. So, Madam Chair.
Senator Chaudhry.
Mr. Nelson, so then what invasive species treatments will be deferred specifically?
Madam Chair, Senator, this would be a region-by-region decision based on, I'm supposing it would be the sequence of events that are needed in order to make the biggest impact on a particular plot of ground. And this spring, if conditions were right to do a fire, those are expensive. Those cost some dollars. We may have to defer that to the fall. If there was going to be a major buckthorn removal project at ABC State Park, and it was determined that waiting till the fall or another time to take on that buckthorn was an acceptable and prudent decision, then that's the type of thing that would go ahead. We have at any given time in all of our parks resource management plans that describe desired future conditions. And given the opportunity and the money, we try and make advances on as many of those as we can. So it would be individual park decisions that would be made about what can be deferred and what needs to take place at this time and cannot be deferred. Does that help clarify that?
I think, Madam Chair, Mr. Nelson's sort of what would be the kind of dollar amount within invasive species treatment that would be deferred?
Madam Chair, amongst
the $1.25 million that you're looking at here.
Madam Chair, Senator, we would have a percentage of each of the four regions that would total $450,000, which is a total that we would be looking at for the unallotment. And it would be a percentage of dollars that would come out of each one of those regions based on project costs. On average, it costs $1,000 per acre to do some type of treatment, whether it's buckthorn removal or a fire. And so depending on how many acres we would want to treat, the dollars available, can it be deferred or not? Those are the kind of decisions that we would make within the region about a particular park project.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. All right. We do need to keep moving here. So, Mr. Meyer, why don't
we... Madam Chair, members, moving on to the Division of Fish and Wildlife. Total number there that we're looking at general fund, which they do not have a lot of general fund dollars, is $908,000. So of that, $208,000 has been unallotted. See, prairie wetlands, 270 fewer acres of habitat would be acquired through easements for the remainder of the biennium. Also be reducing our TB fencing. Department of Ag is working on this issue as well. They're offering other options for affected farms. And also with the Minnesota Shooting Sports Center, basically we'll just be mothballing that facility right now. It's completely underutilized. We do have some severe issues we need to come back and discuss with Senator Saxog, since that lies in his district, and also the committee about the future of that facility.
All right.
Madam Chair.
Senator Dill.
Madam Chair, Mr. Myers, earlier this week I had somebody tell me they could save $3 million per year, I believe it was per year, if we privatized your fish production facilities. Does that make any sense to you?
Mr. Meyer?
Madam Chair, Senator Dill, you could close them, but then you would still be having to buy the resources that we are producing in our own facilities at whatever that cost is that we're producing those fisheries, that fish stocking for. We can certainly come back and talk with you in more detail about that some other time if you wish.
Well, my impression was that $3 million sounded high to me, and I wasn't sure just where the number came from, and I wasn't sure if that's how much we're totally spending in that area to produce the fingerlings and so forth. You don't have to get into details right now, but that was the word on the street here at the Capitol, and I'm just wondering what that really means. How accurate is that?
Madam Chair, members, it's a pretty complex discussion topic to talk about our fish stocking programs and privatizing it and fingerlings versus hatchlings versus whatever else we're stocking. I think it'd be best use of our time to talk about that with the committee, maybe at a separate hearing. I know last year we did get into some fish contracting issues in conference committee, and the policy bill at the end dealing with the Department of Administration about how we do fish hatchery procurement, how we do buy privatized stock. There are a lot of other issues that go along with that, testing VHS. And so, Madam Chair, we can talk about it now if you want to, or we can try to figure out how to do it later on.
Maybe we should have a fuller discussion later with all the information in front of us. That would be helpful. Senator Bach?
Well, Madam Chair, Mr. Meyer, as long as we're probably going to revisit this, I'd be interested in knowing how our approach differs from Wisconsin.
Madam Chair, Senator Bach could put that on
Mr.
the list.
Mr. Meyer, okay.
I mean, I just saw a new executive order that the two governors signed. Apparently, they're going to agree to work more cooperatively, share some services. This might be an area where we can learn something from each other.
I'm sure, Senator Bach, it is, and we are actively involved in that executive order process and looking at opportunities that lie there. I know just on the surface, Wisconsin actually raises minnows as well and sells minnows to people. I don't think we want to be displacing bait farmers. But certainly anything and everything that we can do to improve services to reduce costs is on the table. Privatization is one of them in many areas. So we will get back to you on those issues. Madam Chair, moving on to ecological resources, the reduction listed here is 1.055, and we were looking at a balance of $5.4 million approximately back in December on those dollars. The impacts from this division will be a reduction in terrestrial invasive species management support, invasive aquatic plant grants, temporary help for environmental review projects, equipment purchases, stream restoration project funding, website development, and a delay in office improvements, reducing equipment purchasing and computer upgrades. On the staffing side of things, they are dealing with vacancies. No one will be let go or laid off under this proposal here. Reinvest in Minnesota will have a reinduction in information systems equipment purchases, and there is some general or the clean water dollars that we are unallotting, dealing with staff savings at this point in time, looking at a reduced biological monitoring component, training for staff, and equipment purchases will be delayed. Now we're leaving a position vacant until the following biennium. Under Project Wild, we will be canceling a native prairie seed harvesting workshop. And then stream facility study will be reducing the ecological restoration projects until 2010. We can certainly talk about those projects in more detail if you have a desire to, Madam Chair.
Can you just break down the dollars for each of these areas quickly?
Yes, Madam Chair. Steve Hirsch will be.
And the total unspent?
Madam Chair, the total unspent we were looking at is $5.4 million. Back in the middle of December when we were working on this.
Mr. Hirsch.
Madam Chair, Member Steve Hirsch, DNR Ecological Resources. Just a breakdown of the dollars, about $209,000 would be with terrestrial invasive species management reduction, about $19,000 aquatic invasive species management reductions. We've got in the reinvest in Minnesota piece that Mr. Meyer spoke of, that's about $37,000. Clean water, I'm going to have to do some quick math in my head, but it's about $125,000 for the positions that we're not going to fill, and then another $131,000 that was rolled forward from last year that we were going to spend on additional biological monitoring, training for staff, some equipment purchase, and then acceleration of our watershed assessment tool. About $50,000 was for canceling the native prairie seed harvest workshop, and that is a, I should mention, a typo on there. That shouldn't say Project Wild, which is a wildlife education program. That should actually be native prairie seed harvest. About another $75,000 in RIM will be for reduced equipment purchase and temporary help for environmental review projects. About $5,000 are reduction in ecological restoration projects, and then the remainder would be the reduced equipment purchase, computer upgrades, delay office improvements, and website development. And I've got a spreadsheet. That was probably a little bit hard to follow, but I do have a spreadsheet that could make copies available for the next
meeting. All right. Thank you. Questions? Senator Chaudhry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The invasive aquatic plant grants you said was $19,000, Mr. Hirsch?
Madam Chair and Senator Chaudhry, correct.
What's the primary use of this particular grant?
Madam Chair and Senator Chaudhry, these are grants that go to local groups to control either Eurasian water milfoil or curly leaf pondweed. We anticipate having about $900,000 available for those grants in this coming year. But we had this small amount that was left unspent from the previous grant cycle that we decided to unallot.
And Madam Chair, Mr. Hirsch, how many stream restoration projects will not be able to go forward? And remind me what the amount of that was.
Madam Chair and Senator Chaudhry, this is another typo. That should actually say steam facility study, not stream facility study. And this was the program that Madam Chair referred to earlier, where we take removal of woody biomass, removal of invasive species or other undesirable vegetation with ecological restoration. The amount was $5,000, and this was a small amount. This is out of a $500,000 appropriation. This was a small amount of money that came back to us after one of the projects didn't cost as much as we anticipated. What happens is you're estimating the amount of woody biomass that you'll take out in a particular project. It's inexact science, and so sometimes the projects end up not costing as much as you anticipated. So this is a small amount from one of those projects.
Madam Chair, Mr. Stream restoration project funding should be what instead?
Stream facility study?
Oh, I'm sorry.
I was referring up a few lines. Stream restoration project funding.
Madam Chair and Senator Chaudhry, that actually shouldn't be there. We're not reducing stream restoration project funding.
Okay. And is stream facility study? Is that supposed to?
That should be steam. I apologize, Madam Chair. This is. It's gone through several reviews, and some edits were not caught in the last round, apparently.
All right.
Lastly, Madam Chair, just operations support, $82,000 that we'll be looking at regional planning services throughout all of our regions to reducing those through a vacancy that's there and doing some joint planning within the regions, sharing positions between regions 1, 2, and 3, and 4.
All right. Thank you very much, Senator Chaudhry, and then Senator Hahn.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Just how on the clean water, what is the how will that delay impairment assessments? You know, how many less bodies of water we will be able to assess?
Madam Chair and Senator Chaudhry, the the funding that we've got for clean water that's being held here, there's actually two positions that aren't filled right now. One is a statewide coordination position. We had an individual in that position, and he left the position. That would not affect the actual number of assessments of impaired waters. This is actually a person that was trying to, a position that's trying to coordinate DNR's involvement in the overall TMDL planning process. The other position that we're holding vacant for the rest of the year is a position that does biological monitoring to develop biological indicators of water quality. And what this is essentially sampling of non-game fish populations and then drawing conclusions about the water quality based on the species of non-game fish that are present. So that work will be curtailed or reduced for the remainder of the fiscal year. And I don't know off the top of my head exactly how many lakes that won't be sampled as a result of that.
Madam Chair, I guess a broader question, Mr. Meyer. Has the DNR instituted a complete pay freeze for all non-bargaining unit employees?
Madam Chair, members.
And if so, when was that instituted?
You know, there's not a pay freeze in place right now. We've been working under hiring restrictions across the board. The department did not receive any authorizations or any appropriations for salary increases. We've been working with the committee to get what we call cost of living adjustments through some of the dedicated accounts for certain divisions, fish and wildlife employees, for example. But there is no executive branch pay freeze in place currently at this time. We are looking at every salary savings option that there are, not filling vacancies, and making sure when we do have vacancies that we are working with current staff that may not have a position in the future to secure a position for them within the department as we move forward. I'm not aware of any DOER or MMBS, I guess, position on any unit salary freezes right now. I would assume if that goes into place, it would be across the board and not just with any unclassified or other bargaining unit that's out there.
This is a really helpful start to the budget discussion that we're going to have to continue as we move through the session for the next biennium. I know the House in particular is looking for, they're going to try to do zero-based budgeting, and they're going to be looking for extremely detailed breakdowns of expenditures. And I know that this committee is going to want to have that in the clean water area, invasive species, forestry, some of our other priorities we've had over recent years. We're going to have to really delve into exactly where the money's going and what outcomes we're getting for those areas. So we'll continue this discussion, but we're going to need to keep moving now so we can get to the rest of the agenda. But sorry, I forgot. Senator Hahn had his hand up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick question, Mr. Meyer. The $5.3 million in unallotments represents what percentage of the total budget for these for your divisions? Do you know what that would be?
Madam Chair, Representative Hahn, what we were looking at is the unspent remaining 2009 general fund allocation. The number that we were looking at, once you subtract the unspent open appropriations, was $51,139,000. So it is roughly a little bit more than 10% of what was remaining there. If you look at the overall DNR budget, including dedicated accounts, it's over $300 million per year. The general fund appropriation for the department per year, taking out the one-time appropriations passed biennium, was roughly $72.2 million per year. So about $145 million of the department's budget is general fund. You need to take out. Out of the total, you need to look at firefighting costs, the open appropriation, and as I mentioned previously, the payment in lieu of taxes appropriation, which is rather confusing. It comes into the department as revenue. We transfer to the Department of Revenue. It's tracked on their expenditures. So it's money that, and Madam Chair, we might want to talk about how this is done, because it's money that comes into your target, I believe, but is not tracked in your spending. I'm not sure if that's the case or not, but
it,
Senator
fair.
Bach, correct me if I'm wrong, is that how that number is tracked or not?
Yeah, we adjust for that, no doubt.
Well, Mr. Mueller might know better, but I think the Department of Revenue actually, because it's an open appropriation, sends the money out. I don't know why it would. I do believe that. I don't think this committee tracks it.
Mr. Mueller.
Madam Chair and Senator Bach, right now this committee does track it in our budget area. In the finances fund statements, yeah, once the payments go out, it's tracked under aids and credits. But the within the Senate, between the fiscal analyst that works in on your committee and I, we make adjustments so that all the PILT spending is tracked in this budget division. So we make adjustments based off the fund balance to make sure it's all in one area consistently, biennium through biennium. But so.
All right. Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Meyer. We'll be seeing a lot
Madam
more
Chair.
Of you as
Madam,
we move
Madam
forward.
Chair,
Senator Bach.
I remember when Senator Johnson, my predecessor, did this. And let's just get the cards on the table. He did it because he didn't trust the department to not cut PILT funding. And he felt it might be a little safer over at the Department of Revenue. But I don't think he quite got it to the level he wanted it. So, Mr. Knopf, do you remember what that discussion was about? I mean, I remember I was in the House at the time.
Madam Chair, yeah. Senator Bach, what happened was he did get it all the way over there, and then there was some concern that this money could be also used to match federal money that comes into the Game and Fish Fund, the Dingell Johnson and Pittman Robertson money. So then this hybrid was developed where it went to the DNR, then revenue cut the checks. But I think at one point he actually got it all over to revenue, and then it was shifted back to this division. For the first part.
Well, we'll be talking more about PILT, no
Madam
doubt.
Chair, thank you. Just quickly on your performance-based budgeting, we did begin our discussions briefly in the House, and I do need to brief you on where we're at, but I do anticipate presenting our detailed information, which we need to schedule for, but working to make sure that both bodies receive the same information, which will include performance-based measurement goals
Good.
And outcomes.
Great. Thank you very much. We need to bring the PCA up. And do we have fresh coffee? Thanks. I don't usually drink it in the afternoon. It just sounded good. It tastes good. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. My name is Myrna Hallback, and I am the Chief Financial Officer for the Pollution Control Agency. I think this will be a little bit simpler conversation, and the reason being that the general fund for us is about 8% of our budget, and our unallotment goal was $1.4 million. Of that, $800,000 is basically from our program operations. So our administrative costs, IT work, from our travel and budget, those sorts of things. The other $600,000 roughly came from some of our grant work with projects with our partners, our local government, that have proceeded far enough that the project is completed and their money's returned to us. So it's not hindering any projects going forward. It's really the money coming back from a completed project, and we were able to put those forward. So we have some of those in our Clean Water Partnership areas that we work with local government, and there was a little bit less than $100,000 of the 07 Clean Water Legacy one-time funding that, again, we weren't able to move out. That money would be disappearing. We're returning that early. So in general, what we're doing is reducing our own travel, we're holding our own vacancies, we're reducing our IT, both spending on hardware and contract costs. I've reduced some other contracts that we work with to help as we're moving forward into electronic file management and those things. So we're just finding a different way to do some of those, and we're holding vacancies as well. And so when we combine those, it really is to figure our administrative costs first, and that's what we looked at. That's what our temporary commissioner asked us to do. He also wanted it to be clear that our partners would be held harmless during this process, and so that's where we've looked at those kinds of projects that have completed that, or that we've been able to put 09 monies into and extend the length of their project. So we really work those. The reason I have not provided you each of those grant, we have not had the opportunity because our plan has not been approved yet by management and budget, and we have not had the opportunity to talk with our partners. So I would hate for the first conversation to be at this level where we're talking with you. But we have held them harmless. They'll be able to meet any of their base obligations as they work with us on it. With that, I'd open any kind of conversation you'd like.
Great, thank you. Are there questions? No? Senator Chaudhry?
Yes, Madam Chair. Has there been a pay freeze within the PCA?
You kind of missed what she said. Ms. Hallbeck?
Madam Chair, members, our managers have had their pay frozen, so we will not be doing an increase for the managers at this point. Our staff will be receiving their annual step increases if they're eligible for that. And we did, we're one of the agencies who typically would do an achievement award as allowed by contracts, and we did not do that this year.
Madam Chair, a bit of a glib question. It's part of your hiring freeze, the reason why you haven't gotten a new commissioner yet?
Madam Chair, members, that decision is with the governor, so I wouldn't know if he's helping us save our money that way or not. I think he is feeling confident in the temporary commissioner right now and in being careful about his decision as he moves forward with that and getting us the appropriate commissioner to manage the agency.
Madam Chair, do you know where you are in the process? Have you had any word on when you'll be getting a new commissioner? And remind us who the acting commissioner is.
Madam Chair, committees, the temporary commissioner is Paul Egger, who was our deputy commissioner under Commissioner Moore. And to the extent I know, the governor is going through his process of looking at those folks that may be interested in the candidates and moving along. We don't have a specific timeline on when that would be.
Just last question. What's the difference between temporary and acting?
Madam Chair, members, there is actually temporary is the statutory movement of the commissioner from the commissioner to the deputy commissioner, and acting commissioner would be if the governor elected to have someone perform those duties who was not the deputy. So perhaps he would choose an assistant commissioner, which is lower down the list. And so if that person were to move up to commissioner, that's an acting. Okay. Temporary is the actual deputy set by statute.
Okay.
Ms. Hallbeck, did you say the $100,000 from the Clean Water Legacy funding, what the impact of that is?
The little less than that is the 07 one-time money, and there really is no impact. That was money that we had hoped to move out to partners for some of the assessments. And in the 07 money, our partners were not quite as ready yet to take that on, and that money would end in 09 and go away. And so we have just elected to return that sooner. But it does not impact any of our assessment work.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll be looking for a more detailed report in the future from you.
Absolutely.
Great. Thank you so much. All right, members, we're going to move on to the issue of the land sales by the DNR. And Mr. Meyer, do you want to come back and talk to us about this? We should start by talking about the law that was passed requiring some of these land sales. You're going to give us all that
Madam
background?
Chair, yes, and thank you. And just to go back, one thing that I was made aware of, and there is a pay freeze, Mr. Senator Chaudhry, Madam Chair, on middle management or management and commissioner plan salaries across the board through all state government. I neglected to remember that. So there is an executive branch pay freeze for all practical purposes, which goes beyond just appointed positions. It's all members, all employees, and the commissioners and the management plan throughout state government. So they will not be receiving salary step increases beginning January 1st of 09. So that is in place. Madam Chair, members, you should be receiving several documents. The first one is entitled Land Sales, and the second one says State of Minnesota Land Sales, and it's a spreadsheet on there. I'd like to start off with the one that says Land Sales on the top, if I may. And the actual statutory language is on the bottom of page one there. The whole land sale issue really goes back to the 2002 bonding bill, where there was some language in the bonding bill that required the state of Minnesota to do basically an assessment of all of the lands that may be for sale, of all state lands that are out there. 2003 State Department's finance bill came back in and had a $5.505 million land sale requirement on that. That worked so well that in the 2005 State Department's bill, they said, geez, we got, if you go to the admin spreadsheet, this table that says State of Minnesota, I believe they sold about $7.5 million worth of land, with a large chunk of that, 4.4, coming from the sales of the health building to the University of Minnesota in 2005. There is also the sale of the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension building on University Avenue, which generated several million dollars as well. 2005, in the State Department's bill, the law that I have on the bottom of the first page of the DNR document had an additional $6.440 million worth of land sales that were to be required to be sold by June 30th of 2007. And it's important to note that in Subdivision 1, it also says, notwithstanding Minnesota Statute Section 16B281, 16B282, 9409, 94.10, or any other law to the contrary, the commissioner may offer land for public sale only by providing notice of lands or an offer of sale of lands to the state departments or agencies, the University of Minnesota, cities, counties, towns, school districts, or other public entities. Basically, that says that we do not have to come back and go through the land sale process, the land disposition processes that are out there to meet the requirements under this session of law. Back in 2007, people realized that we weren't going to meet this goal, so the 2007 State Department's bill, which was actually Chapter 148, was amended to kick that deadline of June 30th, 2007 out to 2009. Now, it's important to remember that all along this time period, the department was telling people, unfortunately it was in the state government, state finance committees, that the state doesn't have a lot of land to sell. Certainly MnDOT, admin has lands to sell. If we want to sell lands, we have to sell acquired lands that don't have any ties to LAWCON, land and water conservation funding, do not have game and fish fund dollars tied up with it, or any other funding, Dingell Johnson, Pittman Robertson, any other funding strings that have prohibitions on selling of land. I kind of said that till I was blue in the face and handed out fact sheets, and the law went on as it is in statute right now. We have been moving forward to deal with this requirement out there. Unfortunately, we're running out of lands to sell, and it's not a really good time to sell land in the first place. So people have been asking, has a governor asked the department to sell wildlife management areas to make up the budget deficit? No. We're selling land to pay for spending from 05 to 09 that has been enacted. So we're trying to make up for this $6.44 million to pay for things that money have already been spent on. With that, we have sold some land. You'll see the attachments on this page here are lands that we have sold and the contributions we've made to the general fund to date. And if you look at the admin spreadsheet, they're tracking the DNR's total contributions as of 11/18 of 2008 at $1.485 million. Unfortunately, there's not a lot of other land to be sold by other departments that are out there. So a lot of the onus is being placed on the department to look at lands that we have to sell. And as I said, we're looking at lands that primarily as they relate to wildlife management areas have been acquired through other custodial control, such as Department of Administration, Department of Transportation, or other areas. So we're hoping to meet that. It's about $4.2 million, roughly, that's out there right now. We're hoping to meet that goal by June 30th. Otherwise, Department of Finance will come back and do further unallotments to probably mostly the DNR budget because we own most of the land. They'll figure out a process to go through, but every indication I have, they'll look at land owned by department, come up with a formula, and out of the $4 million, I would assume we'd get 80-plus percentage of that number as an additional unallotment. We are looking at other natural resource land sales issues as well. We are in the midst of a strategic land asset management program, just as any other entity that owns land, the University of Minnesota, DOT, other admin. We're currently assessing the lands we have available, what we're managing, what we own, and what we should sell. And in this case, in order to buy new lands, there are wildlife management areas that have been encroached that our area wildlife managers have identified that should be disposed of, perhaps to local units of government as open space, but they should not be part of the state wildlife management area system that we are paying pilt on at this point in time. We're looking at all of those lands across the state, not only WMAs, but parkland, forestry parcels that have been trespassed on due to septic system installation, buildings that have been built over state lines. I often think that people believe it's better to ask for forgiveness than seek permission, and that kind of what happens on state lands a lot of times. So we come back in, a lot of parcels we have on our lands bill are dealing with those trespass and those violations, selling them to the people who've done that. So we're looking at all acquired lands throughout the department and trying to figure out what should the state own, what should we sell to buy newer lands, to buy lands that have a higher conservation value that can be used for their intended purposes. And that's an ongoing process as well. The other overlay on this is school trust fund land. As we're all well aware, there have been some changes to the school trust fund advisory committee. School trust lands, due to some shifts last year in the education policy and finance bill, the school trust subtraction, whereby the amount of school trust revenue that was put into the education budget was the general fund equal amount was subtracted. Now school trust dollars will be in addition to, at least that's the way the law reads right now. So there's more attention being paid to the generation and management of school trust lands. And we are identifying some trust fund parcels to seek authorization to sell isolated shoreline pieces that may be between two fully developed lands, a piece that can be sold as developmental as a cabin or something like that. We're looking for the authorization, but we may not be selling some of those lands right now because the market's not great. Our main focus on selling land will be to meet the first category, the State Department's bill requirement of the $4 million, and then seeking authorization to sell other lands as the conditions allow us to, where we can generate the highest dollar for that market. Madam Chair, that's a lot of information. There are some lists out here. We can certainly talk about parcels if you want. We can talk about what we've sold. But maybe I should just open it up for questions at this point in time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Meyer. Okay, so you still have to sell $4 million worth of land by the end of 2009 under law?
Madam Chair, the current law, and why don't I bring up Mr. Vadas from our Lands and Minerals Division. I believe it's approximately $4.2 million that is short right now, that the balance remains under that 2007 State Department's bill. Off that 6.44, I believe, Marty, isn't it 4.2?
That DNR is expected to sell. Mr. Vadas.
Madam Chair, welcome. Marty Vadas, Director of Lands and Minerals Division. And if you look at this one part of administration handout on the third page, I think that's the total amount that's been sold, that $2.3 million, to meet that $6.44 million requirement. So it's sold in the time frame, and that money has been deposited in the general fund for that purpose. So in total for all state departments, the total remaining is about $4.1 million of additional money that needs to be raised by land sales.
But how much is the DNR supposed to sell?
Madam Chair, there is no direction in the statute on how much should come from each of the departments. It's supposed to be from all of the departments, administration, MnDOT, everyone. And so if the goal isn't met, then it's there's a procedure set up in the law where that money would be unallotted by the governor. And that hasn't been figured out yet. But I think Commissioner Meyer is saying he's believing DNR's portion would be something like 80% of any money that isn't raised by selling land.
Okay. All right, so what you talked about WMAs in particular and said the governor doesn't have a plan to sell off WMAs to meet the requirements of this law, but you also said that there's some WMAs that you're looking at selling, so because they've been encroached or something. So tell us about what your plans are for selling WMAs, which is attracted a considerable, a lot of attention from a lot of people.
I understand where you're going, Madam Chair. And let me start by saying maybe I created some confusion. About a month ago, I received a lot of phone calls that people were hearing in the hallways here and other places that the Department of Natural Resources was directed to sell wildlife management areas in order to balance the budget deficit. Now, that wasn't the case. The case that people were hearing is that we may have sold the WMA to meet the legislative requirements, statutory requirements that are in law right now. And what we're doing in relation to any type of land, be it a wildlife management area, parkland, anything, is we're looking at how we receive the land into the department's control. There's a WMA down in the city of Rochester that we received from the Department of Administration. It's an 80-acre parcel. We have a regional office building there. It's close to hunting. It's in the middle of an industrial park that has no lock-on ties to it. It has no federal funding strings to it. It would be raise a lot of money, and it would be developed into a continual industrial park. Do you know where the waste-to-energy facility is in Olmsted County, Madam Chair?
I haven't been there.
It's directly across the street from that. So, unfortunately, it's currently designated as a wildlife management area, but it doesn't provide the benefits to the public that traditional or most wildlife management areas provide.
Are there other ones that are on your list to possibly sell off?
On that, looking at that area for the 6.44, there's several other ones. One that we required from Department of Veterans Affairs, I believe, the Hastings WMA, that is surrounded on both sides by residential developments. And it's a 40-acre track that would generate a large amount of revenue that we receive custodial control from another state agency. And there's one
Schmidt
other one.
WMA,
the Schmidt WMA in the city of Champlin. That's a little bit different situation, though. We received that as a gift. However, the statute of limitations on that provision has expired. But we're currently in the legislature gave us authority to sell that last year to the city of Champlin. So we'll be working with the city of Champlin. We are working with the city of Champlin on the disposition of that property as we speak.
So when you do consider selling these, is there any restriction on who you will sell to or for what purpose? Or you'll just sell to the highest bidder, basically?
Madam Chair, if you look at the list of parcels that we've already sold, there are two WMA parcels that are listed on there. The bottom of that first page, it's Rosso WMA. And that was sold at appraised value to the Rosso River Watershed District. And there's another one a couple of spots down. It was a parcel that was sold to the County of Anoka. And I think there's no one answer to that question. I think it's whatever makes sense. Obviously, if a local unit of government or a watershed district is interested in acquiring that, absolutely we'd work with trying to convey that land to them for appraised value. Some cases, maybe we'd look at something less than appraised value. It's possible, although we haven't done that yet, that we may well put some of this land up for public auction. But there's a number of ways that we could go with how this land's used. Some of the land, for example, some of the parcels that have been encroached on by housing developments on all sides, we're getting indications that those cities may be interested in seeing that land put up for bid so that they could complete a housing development in that area, for example. So it varies from one to the next. on what the potential disposition would be.
What about these park parcels that are on this list? Root River Trail Parcel, Frontenac State Park, Mille Lac Cathio State Park?
Yeah, Madam Chair, those are very often very small parcels where, for example, on one of them, a DNR horse trail actually had been encroaching on a piece of private land, and it made the most sense to keep that trail intact and to purchase or to sell a piece of land and acquire that one. There are some trespasses, very small slivers of land where people have trespassed onto state park land. So a resolution was to put those up for auction and sell them. So it's not selling large chunks or important pieces of state park land. It's kind of where there's an issue that comes up, and the sale is a way to handle that.
Trying to sell to private entities because they do have to follow other things.
Okay. All right, Senator Chaudhry.
Yes, Madam Chair. To your knowledge, is this $6 million that was required to be raised through sales of land, was that attached to a particular spending item, 2005, or items?
Madam Chair.
Mr. Meyer.
Senator Chaudhry. No, it was actually the concept kind of came about, and it was used in the overall global budget balancing agreements. It wasn't tied to any one project or another project. It was additive to the bottom line on somebody's tablet. And
Madam Chair, I recall at the time there was a rash of various pieces of legislation where there were spending projects, all different disciplines, transportation, education, economic development, and then the cost of it was, instead of, you know, in our bills we usually have some sort of line item, and then there's the dot 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 where that number is filled in eventually. Instead of that, the bills had the state shall sell a commensurate share, commensurate part, portion of this cost through state lands, and it was never specified. And that was the House at the time, and most of those did not pass. But I imagine, my guess is that in the global 2005 budget agreement, some of this slipped in.
Yeah,
I'm not surprised that it's not attached to a specific item, but I was just curious if it was.
Honestly, didn't know about this law until very recently myself.
Yeah. Well, neither did I. I didn't know. I thought we had basically quashed those initiatives because it's as they were as onerous as this is now. So I guess that's my question. One question I did have on some of these sales, and then I have a final comment. On page 2, you've got the Wabasha County parcel. This is just one example. Wabasha County parcel, you sold 8 acres for $2,800. Did you have any idea of why you get only $2,800 from 8 acres? Or maybe there's a similar example where there is acreage for a very low price that you can cite why it was sold for so low.
Madam Mr. Chair, Senator Chaudhry, that particular parcel, as I recall it, was a very, very steep parcel of land. And if I recall, I'm not even sure it was considered to have a buildable site on it without an extensive amount of development, and it was adjacent to a road. And so as far as fitting natural resource purposes, it was one that popped to the top as a candidate for sale. And I think that the sale price really reflects the appraised value of the land.
We have, I know there's some other members with questions. I just want to point out there's at least 2 members of the public who are interested in testifying on this issue. So we do need to keep moving. Senator Bach.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Vitas, did we ever sell the wildlife office in Ely. It seems to me there was a number of acres with that. It seemed to me it would have been a good, it was right on the outskirts of the city of Ely. It would have been a good location for some housing development. I know at one time the city of Ely was interested. The department, I remember, kind of pushed back on selling it at the time. I just didn't see a reason for the, considering all the public land in northeastern Minnesota, to keep a parcel like that right on the outskirts of the city limits of Ely, maybe even in the city limits. Did we ever dispose of that?
Madam Chair, Senator Bach, my memory is no, that has not been put up for sale, but a number of DNR offices have been sold. For example, the World Forestry Office was sold, the Forestry Office in Hinckley was sold, and another one near Brainerd was sold. So they're included in the list of candidate parcels for sale, but that particular one in Ely, to my memory, has never been put up for sale.
Okay, who is next? Senator Hand.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. I have two questions. One pertains to the sales that you show in your document and the various parcels, and all of these were acquired at some point for some cost, and there may have been in some cases additional costs that were incurred to manage those parcels, and then they were disposed of. And my question is, does the sale represent a profit, that activity, or a loss, or is it a break-even deal? Do you have some way you can give us a flavor for what the effect of the sale has been, whether it's been a gain to the state or a loss?
Mr. Vadas?
Madam Chair, Senator Hahn, I think it varies site to site. For example, you'll see some tower sites referred to here, and those were fire tower sites. So they're often less than an acre, a half an acre, a quarter of an acre. The fire tower has been removed, so they're no longer needed for that purpose. And so they were put up for sale in this auction process. Now, I don't know how that answer relates to the question that you asked, but they're no longer serving a purpose. I don't think we probably recovered the cost of erecting that tower and dismantling it, but the land really no longer served a purpose. There are others, like the forestry offices I mentioned, that have been sold. There's a cost in constructing those and put those up for bid at an appraised value, and then they were bid from there. So theoretically, they reflected the market value of those buildings. One of them, for example, that Warroad office, I think sold for almost $250,000, and that was like a one-acre site. It just happened to be in a great location. So I suspect we probably recovered far more than we ever invested in that particular site.
And thank you, Madam Chair. And, thank you. I guess I'm just curious about whether this activity has been of value to the citizens of the state of Minnesota. If we bought this land at some point for some amount of money, and then we put additional cost into structures or other things we've done, and then sold it and never even recovered that cost, I just wonder what value the people of the state of Minnesota are getting from that, although I think in the course of its use there may have some utility that it provided. Second question I have is more general, and that is I'd like to know what is the total amount of land that the state owns.
Madam Chair, I do have a handout I think that addresses that, and I could pass it out or not, but the short answer is it's just over 5.5 million acres of land that the state of Minnesota owns, and DNR manages almost all that. All but about 65,000 acres is DNR-managed land.
And, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Vadas, what does that compare to the amount of land that the state of Minnesota owned in, say, 1990? Is it the same? Is it more? Is it less?
Madam Chair, I would need to put that information together. I don't have that in the top of my head.
And Madam Chair, and just thank you. This is a question that I asked last year about this time, and so maybe you could get us an answer. I'm just curious to know what the trend has been by the state in terms of acquisition of land over the past whatever period of time. Let's just say for arbitrary, just 1990. But if you could get that, I'd appreciate it.
And I just have one more question. When you've sold the land on this list, have you followed the public or the legal requirements of notice? I mean, the requirements for WMAs or for state park sales to change boundaries or any of those things?
Madam Chair, yes. Where we've needed to change boundaries, it has been in the department's land sale bill, and we've let people know that. as we move forward, that those issues will be sold for trespass or whatever else. As we've gone through, we follow the letter of the law as required on all of our sale parcels.
Okay. I mean, I think the law, the other law says you don't have to. Or it might imply
state park
that in
boundary,
some cases.
We've removed pieces from state park boundaries and things like that. And deal with the very, I mean, we've done what we had to do on each parcel, Madam Chair.
All right, let's, we need to bring up the other witnesses who want to speak. So, briefly.
Just briefly.
Senator Bach.
Mr. Vadas or Mr. Meyer, I'm looking at the list, and it doesn't look like it. This does not include the University of Minnesota, who's a pretty large landholder. So, do you know roughly what the University of Minnesota owns? If we add that on to the 5.5 million acres?
Madam Chair, Senator Bach, I do not know what the university's ownership is. This handout relates to state agencies, and I don't believe it includes the university. And I don't believe the university was included in the $6.44 million requirement to sell land.
All right. Thank you very much. We're
thank you, Madam Chair. Just on one other note, we are preparing the final draft, final list of lands that we are proposing to to dispose of. I will get that to the committee as soon as we complete that. I'm hoping to have that, with any luck, by the end of the week, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. And we'll make that available to any interested members of the public that are asking for that as well. Mary Mueller has asked to testify, as has Lance Ness, and I don't know if there are others. So we want to hear from you. Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mary Mueller, and I'm testifying today on behalf of a small southern Minnesota wildlife habitat organization called the Wildlife Habitat Conservation Society of McLeod County, Incorporated. And you probably haven't heard of us before because we're small and only active in a small area. But we recently saw articles in the paper about the sale of these public lands and about selling of wildlife management areas. And there were some areas in, not in our county, but in southern Minnesota close to us that were wildlife management areas that are upon the list of things to be considered right now. And I wanted to share with you a little bit about our organization, just to share how some wildlife management areas are developed and bought into public ownership and the tie that people have to this land. Our organization, last year, we celebrated our 20th year. And I'm just going to talk a little bit about the history, because we started, there was a group of people. We belonged to other organizations like Pheasants Forever, Ducks Unlimited, some of the larger wildlife groups. But we really wanted some areas locally, some green space locally that we could enjoy ourselves. And in McLeod County, which is directly west of the Twin Cities, just outside of the metro area, we're a very agricultural county. If you looked at the soils, you would see why. It's rich, wonderful ag land. But it was very highly developed. And 20 years ago, very little public lands for those of us that believed in habitat to enjoy. And we tried to figure out, well, how can we have some areas here? And about that time, the legislator looked into tourism and came up with the Reinvest in Minnesota program. We were so excited. We just saw this as a means of bringing our goals into fruition and working with the Department of Natural Resources and others to develop some local areas. And so we got very active in purchasing lands. Most of them were ag lands, and then restoring those lands. We restored them mostly to wetlands, prairies, some tree plantings. We felt very strongly that if we were going to have more open spaces in our ag part of the state, we needed to bring in the youth. And so in developing these lands, we would bring in 4-H clubs and school groups, and they would help with the development process. We utilize, like I said, programs like the Reinvest in Minnesota Critical Habitat Account. We utilized other grants where we could find them. But a lot of the funds, a lot of the money we raised ourselves. We did fundraisers. We worked with other sporting clubs, doing banquets, selling raffles. So a lot of the money we found ourselves. And we've worked very closely with Department of Natural Resources, also the Feds, the Fish and Wildlife Service, so that these lands could be bought into public ownership. And through those 20 years since we started, we've been successful in developing about 2,500 acres locally that are now all open to the public. And we did this with a very close partnership. Hundreds of people were involved because our group itself has 300 members, but because we've worked so closely with so many other small groups, there's probably 500-600 people who've been involved in this process, plus the children that have some ownership in this because they helped us develop them. And so I wanted to talk a little bit about that in hopes that as these land sales get looked at in the future, that we look at it not only for the habitat that they involve, for the water quality benefits, for the all the benefits that it brings to the environment, but also for the people who've been really strong part of bringing these areas into their local habitats to enjoy by the public. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your really great testimony. That's a good story that I think has probably been repeated around the state many times in a lot of different communities, and so it's nice to hear that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm glad you brought that up because I did mean to mention that this is mm-hmm. only one example, and this is playing itself out all over the state, mm-hmm. and not only wildlife management areas, but some parks and some of those so scientific and natural areas, but it's people that really want these areas locally that are part of the force that's bringing them on the ground.
And I think it would be really helpful for us, I mean, especially because a number of us weren't really aware of this requirement to sell off these lands, that we just need to pay really close attention to what lands are proposed for sale. And there may be some that some members of the public might think really should stay in public ownership because they do provide that kind of amenity, and they're supported so broadly by the local communities for public use. And so we just need to really pay attention closely to that to make sure we're not making the wrong decision about any of those choices. And I understand the DNR is under a legal requirement to do this, and we should think about whether that's a good requirement or not and whether there's enough parcels to meet that requirement that won't cause any harm to, you know, the good public usage of public land. Senator Chaudhry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Question for the witness, Ms. Mueller. I didn't hear that any of the 2,500 acres that your community has worked on is being proposed to be sold. Maybe you can correct me on that. But the question I have to you is, for your future projects, so many people have heard about these land sales of WMAs. Do you foresee or have you already heard of an impact on the willingness of your partners to continue WMA acquisitions if there is a chance the state will simply go back and sell them?
Senator Chaudhry, Madam Chair, thank you for the question. We had a pretty spirited conversation at our last meeting. After we saw the articles, none of our lands that we've developed are on the list to sell. But because there were lands close by, it did make us nervous. We didn't have the federal tails like Pittman-Robertson money because some of this we did through, like I said, the RIM matching account, but some we donated outright. Mm-hmm. And so it doesn't have those kind of tails. And we talked about We don't want to end what we're doing. We're really excited about it, but we're nervous. And so we talked about finding wordage in a sale that would protect the lands before we would be willing to sell them in the future. We're not sure how we would do that. We don't have any lawyers that are volunteers with our groups, but maybe we will need one. But that's one of the things that we talked about. But yeah, it does affect your drive to do this work, and you worry more because you really feel like this is a partnership. with a lot of public trust behind it. And that's part of the reason I wanted to come today is that, you know, we're counting on you guys to be part of this trust. And when we make these rules, this is the kind of thing that we want you to hear, is that, that this is really important locally and that we're trusting that these will be there for our kids, for our grandchildren, and that's part of the reason we do this work. We are volunteers, and so this is a labor of love and it requires that trust.
Right. Madam Chair, I think that will be what Ms. Mueller said will be the most devastating effect of what we're seeing here. We can look at the spreadsheet and not be impressed. Although I do look at the spreadsheet and I'm still concerned, but the conservation community and those partnerships will be suppressed. If, you know, so far we've only seen 700,000. Think of what's going to happen with another 4 million, and that may not make a huge difference in acreage for the most part. Although I disagree, particularly in the metro area, it will make a difference, a negative difference. But I think the suppression of conservation partners, the local private partnerships that have been so exemplary in this arena, there will be a chilling effect on that. Chilling.
Senator Dill.
Well, Madam Chair, members, I'd like to thank Mary Mueller for coming in here and talking about my Senate district.
Yeah.
And she's right. They've done a lot of great work there. There's a lot of very interested and dedicated people, and I'm proud of the work that's been done there. And thank you for everything you've done. And thanks for taking the time to come out of the country to tell us about it today.
Thank you. Thank you so much for your testimony. We really appreciate it. And we'll have to talk as a committee and talk about how we can try to make sure that we stay. Come on up, Mr. Ness. We got to hear from you, definitely. We'll have to talk about a plan for overseeing this as we move into the future.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chairman, members of this committee, for the record, my name is Lance Ness. I'm the president of the Fish and Wildlife Legislative Alliance. Also of note, I was the chairman of the Wildlife Management Acquisition Report, the Citizens Committee that made the 50-year plan and recommendations in 2001. This was the one point we did not discuss, as we dealt primarily with acquisitions and not with sale, although we discussed it. It was not part of our recommendations coming out of that committee report. However, as we too have seen the news accounts and received phone calls, and that's the purpose of my being here today, is just to raise some issues. I've talked a little bit with the DNR about this issue, and they've made some assurances to me that certain lands won't be sold. Primarily those that have been bought with waterfall stamp money or pheasant stamp money or duck stamp money or under a surcharge of our license, that those lands will not be sold. So those are some of our concerns. And as we talk about those, too, we just want to note a couple of these issues. One is that, you know, we understand there's a law that's been enacted now that's requiring the sale of these lands. We do think it's kind of contradictory, however, in light of the plan that I just spoke of, as well as a new constitutional amendment that also is highly geared towards land acquisition, water acquisition, and shoreline protection, and so forth. So this seems to be a little contradictory at this time. Another point is, do these lands have other benefits for conservation other than actual hunting and fishing and trapping? Are there wildlife aspects that we're neglecting? And should they perhaps no longer meet the needs of wildlife management areas, perhaps they still meet the needs of conservation, whether it might be flood storage, or maybe perhaps it's educational in value for kids to go out and see a bluebird or a warbler or some other type of aspect of wildlife. So are there other conservation benefits that we're perhaps neglecting in the rush to meet this legislative mandate? And has anyone thought, third issue is, has anything thought been given to what will become of these lands as they're sold? Again, if the conservation is taken away from them and they're developed for whatever other reasons, what have we lost some additional benefit in conservation? And do they need to put easements on them, conservation easements to be placed on these lands as they're being sold to protect their conservation values? And the fourth question, finally, do these lands exist? Is it, you know, entirely upon the DNR's aspect to sell off these lands because they need to meet this requirement? And we think you should revisit perhaps that particular section of the law to see if the DNR actually has the
lands available to be sold in particular. I'll try to be brief here, so I'll end my issues. And at this point, I would like to point out to the committee that this is my 25th year in front of a Senate committee, and I'm going to turn 29 in March. So I just wanted to point that out.
Congratulations on both. Yeah, I'm getting younger and staying with us for all that length of time. We really appreciate your participation.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, and I apologize. This hearing went a little longer than I had predicted it would, so we are kind of running out of time, and so this is an issue I think we're just beginning the conversation on. So we need to figure out how to monitor it as we go forward and see if there need to be some fixes.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak before the committee. If you need any information from us before, we'd be glad to furnish that information again. And if you need to see the report on wildlife management acquisition, we'd be glad to give that. Thank the committee for your time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ness. I appreciate that. And I'm thinking, at a minimum, we should be asking the DNR to evaluate the conservation value of all of the lands that they're considering. I mean, I know we've talked in previous years about WMA sales where there wasn't any hunting being able to be done anymore because they were abutting residential areas. And I agree with you 100%, Mr. Ness, that doesn't mean they shouldn't be parkland, in areas that still need places for people to go outside and recreate and enjoy the outdoors and to preserve them for habitat or conservation purposes. So we need to be thinking about all of those goals when we're, trying to follow the letter of the law and see if we need to make some changes. So, Mr. Meyer, we should talk about how we can get a little more information about the habitat and conservation values of these different lands on the list and whether some should be, set aside and some should be allowed to be sold off, because I think there could be some big differences.
Madam Chair, we certainly can do that. And just for the record, scientific and natural areas are not part of this process at all. So we're just looking at other acquired lands that are no longer applicable for their designated uses. And it's a three-prong approach. As I mentioned, we have the statutory requirements, but we're also looking strategically. State land asset management is the only way we're going to get to purchase land within these no net gain, no net loss, whatever you want to call it, counties, by divesting of some of the lower conservation value land in order to buy the higher conservation value land. And it is a discussion we need to have openly and honestly with the legislature, because we do need some direction from you. So thank you for the time and the interest in this topic.
Great. Thank you
it.
So much. All right. Committee, thanks for your attention and good questions. The committee's adjourned. That makes up for this.